Okay, welcome back, and it's over to Mr. Baker.
For the record, my name is Eric Baker. I'm the Deputy County Administrator for Kitsap County. I'm also overseeing the comprehensive plan. I apologize, my presentation only runs an hour and a half, so we should be fine. Yeah, see, they found it a little funnier than, yeah, I got to work on my delivery. Want to talk about a couple things here. You'll get to be spending a lot of quality time with county staff between now and pretty much the end of October as we go through revised documents, a final environmental impact statement, capital facilities plan, and comprehensive plan related to the 2024 update. Thank you for sticking with me for as long as you have. We've been doing this since 22. We are now in the backstretch of the comprehensive plan. So the drafts will be out on August 30th. The next time you'll see me is the day after Labor Day. So hey, you're welcome for ruining any holiday plans you may have. What the plan for that meeting is, I'll be going over just generally what the documents do. You've seen drafts of them previously. They have been updated based upon what we call the preferred alternative. So instead of looking at three alternatives, it now looks at one alternative. It also makes amendments to the goals and policies and the comprehensive plan, the development regulations, and the capital facilities plan, both consistent with the preferred alternative, but also consistent with a lot of the public comment that we have received. We received public comment on both ends of the spectrum on a series of issues, whether it be housing, environmental protection, et cetera. We have worked to find a balanced position on these goals and policies and development regulations. Obviously, balance is in the eye of the beholder. It is important to note that these goals and policies are necessary. When you read goals and policies, make sure you don't look and say, okay, that one has to be held over all others. When you look at goals and policies between the chapters, they all need to be balanced. Ensuring affordable housing, ensuring protection of the environment, both appear in the comprehensive plan, but in implementation must be balanced against one another. So when people come and they testify and they indicate, oh, I saw that you're supposed to be doing this absolutely, that's not necessarily the case. It has to be balanced. But what I want to talk to you about was that schedule. We will be going through a couple work sessions with the Planning Commission moving into the end of September. We do have a special bonus Planning Commission meeting coming up at the end of September, which would be your public hearing on the documents. So you'll have this one and two other work studies, I believe, leading in to the public hearing. During that time, we'll also be doing public outreach. We've already been meeting with a number of groups, have a number of other meetings set up, as well as doing general public meetings on the comprehensive plan. Largely, a lot of that you're going to see in the documents have been well discussed. So we are hoping to stand on the shoulders of past outreach with this new outreach, because we are going to be moving pretty quickly as we reach the December timeline. Let's see, any questions on where I'll be taking you between now and the end of September, with the idea being that the Planning Commission will be making a recommendation this time, a formal recommendation, findings of fact, that would go to the Board of County Commissioners in mid-October.
Go ahead. In terms of timing then, were we saying we're going to have an extra meeting in September, or yep. Are we just, so yep. It'll be what, the 24th? 3rd,
17th, and 24th.
24th.
I am so generous. And then the next meeting, of course, would be, October 1st. That would be the beginning of your deliberations. And then you would be concluding deliberations at your next meeting in October and approving findings of fact. I think one of the topics that we've been spending a lot of time on over the last 6 weeks is the tree canopy requirements. That's something that we've been talking to the public about. We've had public, sorry.
Did you have a question?
No. Okay. Oh, I apologize.
No.
Oh, anyway.
Go ahead.
Okay.
My question was, when do we see the EIS for the alternative two?
Of the final environmental impact statement will be out on August 30th, along with everything else. Thank one you. Big, lovely package of information. You'll have the goals and policies, which is where we want to go. The final environmental impact statement that'll indicate what are the environmental impacts of us developing in this manner. And then the capital facilities plan, which will say, okay, based upon that and your environmental impacts, here's what is going to cost to schools, roads, other things like that. And then the development regulations, which will be the documents that will be what development must achieve build moving forward. One thing that everybody's kind of been asking me that I think I'll just mention here, and I'll probably mention it several other times, while we are looking to adopt the document, the board is looking to adopt a document on December 2nd, we are looking at probably a 60-day period where before it becomes effective. So that is what we call our appeal period. That doesn't necessarily mean the time starts from the second. We have to put out a notice of adoption. We have to make sure we get all the documents correct. But probably looking somewhere around Valentine's Day, we're hoping to have a implemented comprehensive plan based on a December 2nd adoption. So everyone's like, well, does that mean December 3rd something special happens? No, it's a Valentine's Day present from me to everybody. We really wanted to talk about the tree canopy requirements. You guys spent a lot of time talking about the critical areas ordinance recently, which is the protection of streams, wetlands. It does include trees as it applies to buffers. What I'm going to be talking to you about is above and beyond those protections. I have some other comments on that here in a moment. Oh, come on now. You can do it. There we go. All right, don't need that. That was for my last meeting. So what did the board want to do? You've heard this from me before. They wanted to ensure trees were part of new development in urban areas moving forward. Obviously, if you have a critical area on your property, you're going to have trees regardless. I'll show you how that is implemented into this program. But let's say you have a property that doesn't have any critical areas on it. And they want to ensure that there are trees that are a part of that to mitigate heat blooms. Trees are important for a whole host of reasons, and codes are written to achieve certain benefits. The one main benefit when you're looking through the code that has been prepared is we're looking to mitigate heat blooms in the urban built environment. We want to make sure there is some green as well as the enhanced asphalt that's going to come from the greater densities that we're talking about. But one thing I do want to make sure, this is very different than the CAO. This is a discretionary code. There is no best available science that is required to be utilized. The Board of County Commissioners is interested in seeing more trees in development than we currently have. That does not mean there is a magic number that they have to hit. Obviously, any additional trees is more trees than we would have just under our landscaping code. This is a discretionary action and does not necessarily have the same sideboards as the critical areas ordinance. That's been one of the questions we've been getting in a lot of public testimony, especially with everyone who's been working so hard on the critical areas ordinance. It was focused so much on the best available science criteria. So I talked about the preferred alternative. Basically, the board gave us some parameters to develop this code. They wanted tree requirements to be based on units, a certain number of tree units per acre. I have X number of acres in gross, not net, so entirety of the property. And then you have to have a certain number of tree units in your development. Those tree units are based on promoting existing trees first. They would like to preserve existing trees where possible. So you get greater tree credits for keeping trees on the property. However, you're not required to keep trees on the property. You can replace trees. So basically what you're seeing is kind of a hybrid code where we want to encourage people to maintain trees where they can, but that is not their only path forward. They are able to plant trees, but the replanted trees are worth less than keeping existing trees, especially existing large trees. These trees are only required for subdivision and project approvals. So if you own a home on a single lot, or if you own a lot and just building a home, this code will not apply to you. You still have the critical areas ordinance and other codes to have to deal with, but it only applies to when you're subdividing land or when you're building a multifamily or commercial project. That's when you have to have these considered. Trees within buffers and landscaping, things that are already on the code and things that may be expanded with the critical areas ordinance, those count towards your numbers. So projects that have a stream buffer on it, very likely most of their tree requirements are going to be covered already. But if you don't have a critical area on the property, that's where you're likely going to have a larger challenge. And I'm going to give you some examples of what that challenge will look like coming up here in a moment. And then impacts will be deducted from land capacity. We've already kind of calculated in what this tree canopy, what these tree codes would look like in the final environmental impact statement and capital facilities plan that you'll be seeing coming out on August 30th. So what we have is a staff draft. It came out in July. We obviously provided some drafts that were in the December 2023 documents. We've received a lot of comment about this. This has been pretty much dramatically changed in a lot of the ways that I'm going to show you here in a moment. Again, it's neither tree replacement nor tree retention. It is a blend of the two, giving as much flexibility for the developer as possible. As possible, of course, is the challenge on that one. We acknowledge potential changes to the stream buffer protection, so we calculated those in. We tried to balance the numbers that you're going to see here in a moment with our need to improve housing diversity. And then, like I mentioned, it was a hybrid of the tree replacement and tree retention. So where does the proposal apply? It applies to urban areas only. No rural areas are currently affected by any of these codes. That's another thing that people were misunderstood. Tree canopy requirements shall apply to, again, subdivisions and multifamily development that are four or more developable lots or units. So if somebody wants to put a triplex on a piece of property, the tree canopy code does not apply to them. If you're going to go four or more units, so basically you're outside the old short plat threshold and moving up, you'll need to address tree canopy in some way or another. And again, all of this is going to be based on gross acreage, not net acreage. Retention of trees greater than 18 inches is encouraged. And like we mentioned before, tree retention is preferred to tree replacement, but both are allowed to meet a math problem, which of course is what all planning ultimately comes down to nowadays, is a math problem. So let me make sure I got this thing that's covering up all the really important information. Part of my anti-transparency program. All right, there we go. So what I'm going to show you first is the tree units that are located in there. So basically, trees of particular sizes are worth more than ones of other sizes. So taking a look here, the larger the tree, the more it is worth. So trees between 1 and 8 inches in DBH, diameter at breast height. We want to use terminology that other folks have seen before and something you can actually measure yourself by walking up to a tree with a tape measure. Yes, sir.
Some of your terminology, is this pulled from an arborist's point of view?
A lot of this is based on arborist terminology.
Okay.
And it's also based on a series of similar regulations. Predominantly Pierce County is what we utilized.
Okay. It just struck me as, why don't we just call it what it is and not go into special terms that the common person goes, a what?
Yeah.
A DBH?
The downside is once you moved into code, you almost have to write it in a manner that's for attorneys. But the new terminology is a diameter at standard height, which is even more confusing because nobody's ever used that term until just like a year ago. So now we utilize it at breast height. And again, with the idea being that you can go and you can measure a tree and you yourself can figure out exactly what that tree is worth. You don't need an arborist report to tell you.
Okay. And we'll talk about your math problem here mm-hmm. in a little bit.
Sounds good. So as you move up, 12 to 18 is worth 2, 18 to 24 is worth 3. You get larger than 24, it's 3.5. But you can also replace trees. So if you're doing deciduous trees, you pretty much a 2-inch caliper, again, an arborist term, basically 2 inches in width, is 0.5. And replacement is of evergreen trees is worth 1. So obviously, if you're replacing trees, you need a lot more than if you are maintaining trees, thus the incentive component. Then as you move into, okay, what I own X number of acres, what does that mean to me? Basically, if you're in the urban low residential zone, so that's pretty much where your single family zones are located, you need 20 tree units per gross acre. As you move to urban medium, it's 10, urban high, it's 10. So now you're talking about your multifamily residential zones. As you move into your commercial zones, you're now looking at 15 tree units per acre. That's for mixed use and multifamily development that's located in those. And then as you go into your urban high intensity, it's 10. So now you're talking about downtown Silverdale. Now you're talking about the Kingston area around the grocery store, McWilliams Road, things like that. So what are some of the things that apply to these? Retain trees, they have to have a life expectancy greater than 10 years. They got to be healthy, not sick. They need to, if they're in groupings, that would be beneficial. But if they aren't, they need to be wind firm. So that basically wind throw was the old term. But right now they need to be able to be, they'll stand up after all their buddies are gone. Trees greater than 8 inches in DBH are located within critical areas, shoreline, and associated buffers may be credited, like I mentioned before. So that's not, that's only the 8 inches or greater, not the smaller alders, but that type of thing. And then no state or county invasive nuisance or other species may be counted. So don't plant things that are invasive, or don't maintain things that are invasive, and then ask for tree credits for them. Or would like to remove them. There's not a lot of those, but we want to be careful with that. Replacement trees, anyone who's aware of our landscaping code, that's pretty much how these trees need to be planted and how they need to be maintained. They need to be consistent with a species list. We have one in code now, though likely we're going to remove that species list and put it in a resolution so it can be changed as we find out things. We found out that one tree that we put on the list actually is very susceptible to an insect that is actually growing at some form of oak that is starting to move west from the East Coast and is extremely detrimental. So that insect only eats those trees. So they're really recommending we don't plant any of them. It's that type of thing that we'd have more flexibility if we did it in resolution versus code. Okay. Individual species of non-native replacement trees shall not exceed 35%. So you can still plant your ornamentals, but we really are encouraging native vegetation. A minimum of 50% of those trees have to be in some kind of protected tract, not just on somebody's property. It may be on their property, it may be on their title, but it sometimes can be confusing. So basically, what does that mean? It means that they need to be in open space tracts, they need to be in road tracts. Currently, they are not allowed to be in right-of-way, though very likely the new version of that is going to change that, as we've got a lot of feedback indicating street trees on public streets are still trees, and they should still count towards tree credits, which is a very, very fair statement. And then trees may be planted on a solitary basis or within clusters. Very likely the draft you see coming out on the 30th is probably going to give credit for clustering trees. What that additional credit looks like, we don't know. Obviously, trees in clusters are going to be healthier. They are going to last longer. Wind throw is not as big of an issue, and they provide other benefits. At any point, if anybody online has any questions, or if anybody in front of me has any questions, please stop me. Tree canopy protection plan. Yes. Oh, sorry.
What would be a non-protected tract?
A non-protected tract? Yeah, your private property. So basically, I have a tree, it's in my front yard or it's in my backyard. It is one that's been planted to meet the tree units, which means it's a protected tree, not one that you can take down later. Obviously, that's harder for people to understand after you've bought a piece of property. It's like, I own this piece of property. It's like, well, no, but that tree is supposed to stay here unless it becomes dangerous and needs to come down. So that is a common practice in our development, is to have a certain number of required landscaping on private property. But with this code, we're trying to be a little more specific about what the protections of that are, so that it maintains itself beyond the first couple of years, or the first couple owners, at least. Tree protection during construction. If you're going to retain a tree, you got to protect the tree. That's the root base. That's the canopy. You need to basically keep your heavy equipment out of that. You don't want to end up disturbing the root ball, et cetera. That is an impact. So when you talk about retaining trees, you're not just thinking about the area around the tree. There is a good amount of space around the outside of it. Could be as much or usually is around 6 feet around the perimeter of the tree. So you're talking about a good amount of space. Tree maintenance, replacement trees must be watered and maintained as landscaping. So as you would landscape, you got to keep them alive for at least the first couple of years. Yes.
Yeah. So just the way the world works now without the ordinance, so you can look around the mall, you know, mm-hmm. the county put in all the trees along Silverdale Way, half of them are dead mm-hmm. around the mall. Half the trees are dead. And so is the plan to have a more aggressive tree police? Is that the code enforcement effort?
Definitely a greater maintenance and monitoring along with everything else that we've talked about. Everything I've talked about in the comprehensive plan, everything that was talked about in the critical areas ordinance needs monitoring. We need to be keeping an eye out to make sure that what we're approving code to do does what it's supposed to. And I will admit we've not been great about that in the past. And you've highlighted one. And a number of folks throughout the critical areas ordinance has highlighted concerns about that. Monitoring will be important because not only does code need to be updated, code needs to be updated based upon your performance of the existing code that you have. And we need to be better about acknowledging how we've done so far before making changes. But yes, you should expect that there will be greater monitoring and greater requirement for people to maintain these trees over time. Because I'm all about full disclosure, what does this code potentially do if you were to apply it? What I'm going to show you here is show you two sample projects. I do want to be clear that neither of these projects are going to be affected by the new code. These are already vested projects. These are ones that were developed under today's code without tree canopy and without critical areas. Both of these properties are properties with no critical areas on them. So again, in theory, this code would have maximum impact on these projects. So the first is Minder Meadows, located off John Carlson in the Central Kitsap Urban Growth Area. It is in one of those urban low zones. It's roughly about 3 acres in size, about 7.4 dwelling units an acre. It is urban low, so it's required under the current draft code 20 tree unit credits per gross acre, or 60 tree units would be required for this project. Basically what was put in, we have an example of a number of the trees that have been put in, but basically there are 32.5 tree unit credits in this project just following landscaping regulations. Most of those are street trees. So the more roads you have, the more current landscaping code requires you to have trees. So basically that's a 27.5 tree credit deficit. So there's additional trees that would have to be put on the property. What I can't tell you from this image is how many existing trees might have been on this property prior to it being graded. If you take a look at the trees that are located on the multifamily project to the west of it, you could see that likely there were some pretty large trees on the property. However, let's pretend that there weren't. Basically, what that would require is a significant replanting of trees in this property. Obviously, the current lot layout probably would not be able to be maintained. If you did, you would be losing a certain number of lots. One thing I do want to highlight when I'm talking about tree canopy code is obviously in the current comprehensive plan drafts, there is a lot of flexibility for lot sizes, lot widths, lot depths, a lot of encouragement for attached housing, etc. So when I talk about loss of units, it isn't a one-to-one movement. Obviously, a project like this, if you had to plant probably 27.5, I wanted to keep this layout and you had everything out, you're probably losing between 4 and 5 lots if you wanted to maintain this layout. However, you could recapture those if you, instead of doing these 45-foot wide lots, and you wanted to go down to 20-foot lots like we are currently allowing, or doing fourplexes, duplexes, et cetera. Yes, that is a different housing type. And I will definitively acknowledge that that will impact the thing that's going to be most important and the thing that's hardest to calculate on a macro basis, the ability for a project to pencil. However, I do want to show that there are opportunities that we put in code to be able to recapture those units. Maybe you can still get the same number of units on the property, but there could be a concern about the project penciling, but that is going to be on a site-by-site basis. Obviously, the costs that go into this aren't just pavement and buildings. It's going to be how far away is that sewer line? Is there a pump station that's required? How easy is it to provide stormwater to this area? Obviously, I think the stormwater is all located within the circle. Is probably where it is currently located. And stormwater has to go in particular places because water tends to run downhill. Any questions about this example? I do have another one coming up here that doesn't include as many roadways, thus does not currently require to have as many trees. Thus, the difference is larger. Nope.
Commissioner Baker?
Yes, sir.
Sorry, Eric.
Yeah, I was going to say.
No, I know.
I got promoted.
Yeah, congrats. So, you know, whether we change this, thank you for going back, to narrower lot widths to allow tracks for trees, et cetera, or removed 4 or 5 lots. We both know that the end result of that is that the sellable product is smaller, whether it's parcel size or the number of parcels, and then the buyer has a sellable product if the lot is thinner, which is less heated square feet. And the end result is higher costs to sell the home.
I will say the increased cost is entirely site specific. I wouldn't say it'll happen as a absolute, but there are going to be instances where that is what happens to projects.
Right, I'm saying it out loud for the public record in relation to homelessness and housing affordability. So,
yep, agreed. That these regulations don't just apply to private development; they apply to housing authorities. They apply to nonprofits. Everybody has to play by the same rules. So,
I get it. I'm just saying, at the bottom of the pro forma, the number to sell a house and make money when you're asking developers to help with homelessness. That's the result.
I would say that depending on how the lot layout works, you could end up with less necessary roadway, less necessary impervious surface. As you shrink your footprint, you have less costs at certain times, but there are going to be impediments on the properties as to exactly where you can put certain things like stormwater. You just can't put that anywhere. But I would say depending on where you lost lots, potentially you could also lose roadway. You could also lose necessary sewer lines. You could reduce impervious surface to a level where now different types of stormwater may be allowable at different sizes. Am I saying that's the rule? No, but I'm saying that that is one of the possibilities as we moved forward with this kind of conversation.
Fair enough.
I wish I had absolutes. Yes, sir.
Well, given the current shortage of affordable housing that we have and housing of all sorts in the county, and as I heard, this is an optional code, is there something to be said for saying, hey, let's delay this? It's not mandatory. Let's delay it for a couple of years. Let's let the housing stock get caught up to where it needs to be. Then let's take a look at this. Is there an argument to be made for that?
Definitively. And it has been made thus far, and I expect it to continue to be made, especially on the heels of the critical areas ordinance, which is going to have an impact on developable land. Is this not the right timing for that? A lot of folks will acknowledge that there's good benefit in what we're proposing here, but there's a lot of unknowns that are coming forward. And the idea of this comprehensive plan is that we're balancing all the things that we need to provide. And we have a housing crisis, and housing is important. However, it is also unfortunate at the same time the legislature gave us the climate change requirements as well. While those are not due today, I don't want to hear the public outcry if we try to implement them all at one time. So we do need to stair step those in. Some people feel the tree canopy code is a way to stair step them, but I do believe there is an argument to be said that this is not the right time for that. And I expect to hear a good amount of that throughout the public process. Not to belabor the point, but this is another example. Same zoning, little bigger piece of property, 3.6 acres. You need 73 tree credits under the current code. This property only had 25 tree credits, only one road, which means street trees only on one road. So there would be substantially more trees that would have to be planted on this. That also could have an impact on the number of developable lots. So as you can tell here, there are some existing trees on the property. But either way, maintaining those trees could, again, have an impact on the number of developable lots, the impact on the performa, the impact on the cost of housing. But each of those is site dependent. And the decision by the developer on what kind of housing stock they are going to build and what the cost of that housing stock is. We've also made it easier to do multifamily and single family zones. We have increased density to 14 dwelling units an acre for single family attached housing. And likely that would also apply to multifamily housing. Obviously, you're not going to get a four-story apartment complex, nor should you in a single family zone. But it does give you the opportunity to do two-story construction. Whether people want that, whether it's affordable, it is one of the options. And honestly, what our code is trying to do is it's trying to provide as many options as possible, as not all options work for all development. It is, again, a site specific. So obviously this project would be the one that is impacted most. We did go through the number of non-critical area constrained properties that are currently developable or underutilized are they're not very few, but they are definitely not the majority. What I keep telling people is with the current comprehensive plan and not expanding urban growth areas very much, what you are going to see is you're going to see development happening on properties that developers have passed on for the last 30 years. They'd elected to build on something else because it was cheaper, it was easier. Though without additional land supply, people are going to have to be going back and re-looking at those properties and looking at them in a different way. That is why we've provided those additional flexibilities. So it is easier to do certain housing types than it was the last time a developer looked at the property and said, okay, this is just not where I want to buy. This is just not where I want to build. But I say that because it is going to be a focus on less attractive for development, but it will also be less attractive for the people living around the development, as a lot of that has been open space for their probably entire lives in many cases, as a number of these properties may not have been cleared since before I was born. Any questions? I'm trying to go full transparency here, which again just makes everything more complicated, but that's what I like, more complications. So moving forward, what are the main considerations as we talk about this code? Small lots and those without critical areas are going to be most affected. How affected? Affected to the level of not being developable? That could be a question mark as we talk about what the right number of units is and what the right code requirements could be if we have a tree canopy code at all. Like I said before, flexibility and lot size dimensions will help. And help minimize some of the impacts, but how many, and like I said before, is the project still viable after the project has been redesigned or you have to lose a certain number of lots? How much additional effort will this create and what additional cost to development? While the development community is not super excited about tree canopy code, they have appreciated the fact that it does not require things that other tree canopy codes require, which is things like an entire tree survey of the whole property or the requirement on its face for additional studies to be done. Also, most of our code really tried to focus on things people can see without having to hire an expert. Things people can see today, things people can see tomorrow. Enforcement's easier. The public understands better. The developer understands better and staff understands better. So it is easier to process. They're still not wild about it, but again, they do acknowledge the fact that we have made a lot of deviations from how other people have treated tree codes to try to make it easier to implement. And one of the things that I think is super important as we move forward, potentially much like mitigation banking for wetlands, should there be a eligibility for tree banking? Obviously, the idea is that we have trees scattered around the urban growth area, but if that isn't possible in certain developments because of the performa issue, should there be other opportunities to plant on other properties? That doesn't necessarily just need to be public parks or public land. That can be private properties. As people are going back and taking a look at some of these historic properties that weren't developed over the last 40 years, they may look and say, okay, that property, it just isn't worth me going in and developing it, but there's a big cleared area on it. I could go and have people plant a whole number of trees on this property, and then I can leverage funding based upon that. Is it a stretch? Not necessarily. Is it a challenge? I think it is something that possibly could be looked at. Things like this come about when you establish a requirement for it. And in which case you're still achieving a lot of the same, you're getting trees in the general vicinity, and you are getting your affordable housing. How that would be implemented, that is not in the current draft, that will not be in the August draft, but that could be a conversation that we say we need to hammer the tree banking component out to ensure that this program is not impacting or overly impacting property and property development. And then lastly, how will isolated trees be retained? So I have a 3-foot wide tree, which is worth a lot of tree credits, but it's right in the middle of my development. It is sitting there. It has a huge root ball. And pretty much every windstorm, the neighbors are going to call up and say that this tree is dangerous. I saw it move. Obviously, a tree of that size has been around a really long time and has survived quite well. But the question being, how are we going to retain those trees? And let's say if one became sick and needed to be cut down, how do we replace those trees now that we're in a developed state? We still need to work our way through that question. So next steps, we're doing outreach through December. So you should expect more opportunity to talk about this and other elements of the comprehensive plan. The revised draft will be released on August 30th, which I think I've said about 22 times. Public workshops, we have them scheduled for September. We'll have additional stakeholder discussions in September and October. And then we will have public hearings before you folks and the Board of County Commissioners running through November, leading to hopefully a December 2nd adoption, because I have a nervous breakdown scheduled soon after. With that, I'm open to any and all questions. I can also provide any additional feedback I've received. We've met with the environmental groups. We've met multiple times with the Kitsap Building Association. And we've also talked to the realtors on these issues as well. So we are doing our standard stakeholder outreach, trying to figure out where the real landmines lie instead of waiting for the public hearings.
Okay.
So this is going to be a separate code. So we're going to have, a comp plan, we're going to have development regulations, we're going to have
The development regulations.
And so we'll have an opportunity as a commission to give a recommendation on this particular code. It won't be so integrated into the comp plan or anything else, so that wouldn't be an option.
No, it's its own section of the code. Doesn't have, I don't think it has any tentacles into any of the other parts of the code. We could assess that. I don't believe we've made any changes anywhere else. But yes, it's the type of thing that could be changed wholesale. It could be changed in pieces. And just like we've done past, anyone who's ridden the comp plan train before, there is the opportunity to make changes. The Planning Commission will be making a recommendation. All the documents will be going through a change matrix. So The Planning Commission can say, okay, I want to do this. I don't want to do that. And we can package all that with a findings of fact document that then goes to the Board of County Commissioners. And the Board of County Commissioners is holding a public hearing on the Planning Commission recommendation. It isn't any other permutation. I'm sure you guys know that, but some people think it is one of the other drafts you're taking the hearing on. It's like, no, it is the Planning Commission recommendation.
Hey, real quick math problem for you.
Sure.
You only use... down to 0.5 on your scoring system.
Yes.
And then you say, well, If it's less than 0.5, it's dropped. If it's 0.5, it's added. Mm-hmm. Why not make it simple on yourself and just use whole numbers?
That is something that we could definitely take a look at.
And who thought of square roots?
That actually does come from an arborist. That is the way that they go about doing these calculations, and
unless there's some magical thing that happens,
yep.
Just take the average. Gotcha. I mean, why are we trying to complicate this? You know, as you pointed out, we're trying to make this so the common person can go out and look and go, here's how many I've got. Mm-hmm. So let's drop the fractions, average out on the roots, on the trunks. It doesn't, why complicate it?
We remove the tangent and cotangent. I entirely understand. That is very good feedback for us to take a look and see if there's a way that we can, again, simplify this down to whole numbers that does live in the world of addition, subtraction, multiplication, and division, right. And not necessarily above.
Right.
Mr. Baker, one other question. Do you have a general sense beyond the landscape code? Is this 20% more work to consider? Is it 40% more? And you've done much more math to get to the point of this slide deck. So any sense there?
You're talking about in permit processing?
No, just talking about, you know, thinking about it from a tree requirement. Does this add 20% to the landscape code requirement or some other percentage?
You'd have to average it out. If honestly, from all the properties that have critical areas, the answer is going to be it adds nothing. For all the properties that don't, I would say that, you're going to be adding probably potentially 50% more trees to certain properties, maybe 60% at the maximum. But again, based upon my driving around and taking a look at what we're considering vacant and underutilized land, there's a lot of wetlands, there's a lot of streams, and there's definitely going to be a lot more buffers that are going to be included in development, which again negates anything I'm saying here, unless you have a buffer made of invasive species, in which case you can't count anyone.
Thanks.
I have one question. Factoring in multi-trunk trees, how do you deal with them?
The multi-trunk trees we did have in here at one point, but we did pull it out because it was confusing. There is an actual calculation that I believe we can include in here that basically talks about if the multi-trunks happen at a particular height off the ground, they're counted. So they have to be lower to the ground to be counted. If they're way up high and they're just part of somebody topping improperly, you don't get credit for that extra thing. Actually, in many cases, those trees are dangerous.
Couple questions. Mm-hmm. You talk about groves and multi-tree clusters. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to specify, I think, mm-hmm. how close in there does that, can yes. you do that? Is that going to be addressed someplace?
Yes, I believe in the August 30th draft, we will have a definition of groves and greater specificity than what you see in the current draft based upon public comment we received, just like what you just said.
Okay, question two. What's driving this? Who came up with this wonderful idea? Is it an RCW? What's driving this process?
As we continue to push for more density, there is going to be likely less landscaping that is included optionally. There's going to be more impervious surface. There's going to be more buildings as we go to greater density. A series of other jurisdictions throughout the Pacific Northwest have tree canopy codes. Most of our cities have things that are actually worse than tree canopy codes. They're significant tree codes, which basically means that tree is of X size. You can't touch it. So I believe that there is a good amount of kinetic energy behind this topic to address heat blooms. But as with everything, there is rumor. I have not actually read this myself, thus I'm going to coin it as rumor, that the new stormwater regulations being handed down by the feds is going to require every jurisdiction to have some form of tree canopy retention code by 2029. So I think it is going to come to everybody's hometown before too long. The Board of County Commissioners is interested in ensuring that trees are part of development. Trees are part of Kitsap County. If we're going to be forced to do density, we need to ensure that trees in our natural system is located in there as well. But with that comes all the complications you've highlighted here today that's been highlighted on Zoom and that the public is bringing forward. We're asking a number of different interests to marry when they don't even date casually well. So this is a challenge.
Okay, I think that's...
Lastly, on the comprehensive plan, if there are particular topics that you have not heard me cover already, that you've seen in past drafts or that after the August 30th come out, that you'd like to make sure that I focus on in either presentations, be prepared for in questions, please let me know in advance. I am perfectly fine with the answer I don't know, and I'll get back to you. But I usually try to make sure I can answer the questions right here in the moment while we can. And any kind of heads up you can give me on what those questions may be will help me be better prepared for you.
Right. And I would remind the commissioners to go through Amanda's, yes, that so that we don't conflict with anything, rules on that.
Yes, thank you. I always leave that part out when I'm suggesting that everybody contact me. No, contact Amanda, and Amanda will contact me.
There we go. Amanda keeps us squared away.
Thank you very much for your time today, and I look forward to seeing you. Oh, yes, sir.
Off topic. Can you tell us what's going on with DCD director?
Who? Oh, yeah. The DCD director, we are in the process of bringing on a headhunter. That's probably not the right word anymore. A recruiter.
Talent manager.
A recruiter is being hired to help us broaden our applicant base. You should see the posting back on the street shortly. We just are making sure we have our full marketing plan together to make sure we get as large a job pool, a applicant pool, as possible. So it's coming very soon.
Okay. All right.
I drove the recruiter around and showed him all kinds of wonderful things about Kitsap County.
Good.
No, that was sarcasm. It's a beautiful place. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks. Okay.
Right, I've got a couple questions for you outside the meeting.
All right. With that, we come to our second general public comment period. Let's see. I do not see anybody wishing to speak. Oh, there, Mr. Garrett.
Can you hear me?
Barely.
Can you hear me better now?
Yeah, there we go.
All right. I just had a couple of things. The first, I thought it was a good presentation by the consultant on the sea level rise. And I thought that it was a good idea that whoever mentioned it kept it on saltwater intrusion. You know, sea level rise puts more pressure on a depleted aquifer. Storm surges have the same effect. They pump up the bottom and cause geotechnical issues, which will aggravate. And I just wanted to make sure that they took that into consideration. The tree canopy stuff, just a brief statement. Before our meeting with Eric the other day, I went out and Googled this on this tree canopy stuff because I couldn't figure out why I was going to go to this meeting. And it's nationwide. There's little counties in Oklahoma, you know, that are doing the same stuff that y'all are going through right now. This isn't just a local thing or a West Coast thing. It's all over the country, you know. And it sounds like to me that you ought to think about getting used to it. That's all I got.
Okay. Thank you for your comment. And let's see. And Beverly Parson?
Thank you. I'm Beverly Parsons from Hansville. And I just wanted to comment that I've been involved with a number of people who have been looking pretty closely at the tree canopy regulations. And I think we have a different perspective than what I've heard here a lot. It seems that much of the conversation today was about how to make this not a problem for developers. And the perspective that I and others are coming from is how do we make this a livable, continuously livable place that has trees as part of absolutely crucial protection for people, for the general citizenry, as we move into more and more climate changes. So, for example, when looking at the regulations, these are even less strict than Pierce County. There's another thing is that if a group like, say, the Arborwood development, one of the people I know did some calculations, and they would have to add no additional tree. They could totally clear cut the area because of the tree allowance for trees in the critical areas. So I just want to make the point that these are so minimal that it hardly seems, I just think they need to be so much stronger. So I just want to present the position that there is another orientation here that has to do with how we protect the lives and well-being of the health of all citizens and not just the benefits to developers.
Okay, thank you for your comment. And I am not seeing anyone else, so I will close this period. And that brings us for the good of the order or commissioner comments. Okay. I will mention to everyone that you've been forewarned of what's ahead here for the next month, 2 months. So stand ready. Okay. With that said, I don't hear any objection. I will declare tonight's meeting done. And we will see you next month. All right. Good night.
Thank you, everyone.